The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi there. This is Janice Peary from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Our first book today is Finn McCool and the Great Fish, written by Eve Bunting. Now, this story comes from the country of Ireland. I don't know if you might remember, but in the month of March, we often celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and that's the day we all wear green, and sometimes we get green lemonade or green ice cream, or we pinch each other if the other person isn't wearing green. This is a story that comes from that country, Ireland, where the first St. Patrick's Day started. So here we go. Finn McCool was the biggest giant in all of Ireland. He was the greatest warrior ever known, and his strength was remarkable. He could lift a house and turn it around so that it faced the sun. And then he could turn it another way at night so it faced the moon where it rose over the mountains. If the weather was bad, and the men of the village were hurrying to bring in their hay before the rain set in, he was ready to help them. He'd lift the carts, the horses, and all, and carry them to shelter. And here it shows Finn McCool, the giant, with a little man on his hat pointing the way. And in one of Finn's hands, there's the man's cart piled high with hay and two donkeys. And Finn was carrying them all to safety. He's the best-hearted man that ever walked on Ireland's green grass, the people said. We're blessed at having this giant live here with us at Drumnahoon. But they all agreed on one thing that was seldom mentioned. Finn McCool wasn't terrible smart. He's a bit of a turnip head, they'd whisper sometimes, and then they'd smile affectionately. He doesn't know much, but he's a great big man for all that. One day, Finn heard the whisper and knew it to be true. In the nearby townland lived an old man who was said to know the source of great wisdom. It was said that he had promised to show this great wisdom only to the right person. He was a bit of a mystery, staying sometimes in his house, and at other times disappearing for weeks on end. Many a man and many a woman had tried to be friends with him so that they could wheedle the secret of knowledge out of him. Simon the baker had brought him fresh baked soda bread, the butter already thick on it. Bertie O'Hanlon brought him a white hen, the best egg layer in all the village, so that he could have a fresh egg for his breakfast of a morning. Bridie Mulligan brought him a barrow load of wood that she had cut herself in the forest. "So you can have a warm fire on these frosty nights," she purred. He thanked them all for their kindness, but he kept his secret of great wisdom all to himself. It was the day after Bridie's visit that Finn came to him. So he couldn't fit in the house, so he sat outside, with his hand resting on the roof. "Old man," he called, "it's Finn McCool, and I've come to ask if you'd share the secret of wisdom with me." The old man came out, and Finn got down on his hands and knees so that they could see each other right. "I know who you are, and I was waiting for you to come," the old man said. "I know you're good and kind as well as big. I know you're a great warrior and a friend to all of Ireland. I know you beat that mean giant Cuchulainn and then saved Ireland from the Scots. But I need to ask you one question. With all that you have, why do you need wisdom?" Well, said Finn, a man is nothing without it. With wisdom, I'll know better how to help my friends. I'll be able to answer their questions, where now I can only shake my head. If I was wise, I could speak for Ireland when the need arose. The old man nodded. You're a giant now and a good man, but you'll be more with the grace of wisdom added to you. So listen. In the River Boyne, there lives a fish, a great huge salmon, the red of the sky at sunset. In him is the wisdom of all the world. Catch him, cook him, and eat him, and that wisdom will be yours. Thank you, sir, Finn said. Two strides took him to the River Boyne. He dropped in his line. There were fish in the cool, gurgling waters. Brown fish, silver fish, fish with the sheen of a copper penny. But none were as red as the sky at sunset. And then Finn saw the great red salmon swimming lazily upstream. Gora, Finn thought. It's as if it's looking for something. The salmon swam around the line and then took the bait and grabbed the hook. The River Boyne tossed and tumbled as Finn pulled the fish ashore. There was a mumbling and a rumbling that seemed to come from the river itself. And the idea came to Finn that the river didn't want to give up this great big fish. It wanted it all for itself. I'm so sorry to take it, he said to the river, but I'm after the wisdom. Finn said, a man can make more use of wisdom than a fish can, so I ask you to forgive me. He took the huge fish in his big hand, wondering at the beauty of it. It shimmered and gleamed in the sunlight, every scale a point of fire. And here he's holding the big salmon on his hand. It doesn't look very big in his hand, but for a man, it would be a huge fish. Finn looked in its eyes, and he saw the wisdom there, all the knowledge of the world. He saw life. How could he kill this salmon? How could he eat it? The thought made him shudder. So he spoke to the fish. You have the wisdom, and I wanted it. But not if I have to sacrifice you, Finn said. The salmon's lip was bleeding from where the hook had caught it. Oh, I'm so sorry about that, Finn said. And he carefully eased the shining hook out of the fish's mouth. But it caught in his own thumb, and the pain near blinded him. He took his thumb in his mouth and sucked on it. And he tasted something he'd never tasted before. His blood. The salmon's blood. There was a tide in him as if something unknown had entered his body. Something strange and beautiful. The fish spoke. I thank you for sparing my life. I was prepared to let go of it. But now my wisdom has seeped into you along with my blood. It is known to me that you will use it in the service of others and of Ireland. Finn stared. He had never heard a fish speak. But why did you let me catch you? For you are wise enough not to take a baited hook. Well, maybe I knew whose hook it was. Maybe I've been waiting for you to come. Thank you, Finn said. I will use the gift of wisdom well. Gently he laid the salmon back in the river and watched it as it swam away. Was it a lighter shade of red now? And there we see Finn's thumb, and it has a hook cut in it where the hook went into his thumb, and it's bleeding just a little bit. And that's where this cut salmon's lip blood dripped into his thumb. So that's how Finn got the wisdom from the salmon. He did not have to kill it. He looked at his thumb. where the hook had pierced was already healed over, and the thumb itself was turning a delicate shade of pink. And here he's showing his new thumb that does look pink. Finn told no one about his encounter with the Salmon of Wisdom, but he did feel a need to tell the old man. He found the house empty and the old man gone. The load of wood, firewood sat unused. The soda bread on the kitchen table was uneaten. The eggs in the hen's nest were ungathered. But there on the path was a glittering trail that might have been fish scales, every one a point of fire. Where do you think the old man had gone? Ever after that, the people in the village of Drumnahoon remarked on how wise a man Finn had become, how he talked with the King of England and the King of France, and presented to them the needs and the wants of Ireland, how he'd saved Ireland from the Vikings that had crossed the sea to take the Irish land, how he knew their own problems and took care of them before they rightly knew it themselves. But still, he's the same good Finn he always was, the people agreed. And there is Finn, helping out another farmer and his wife, and carrying their wagon and their load of hay, and their rooster, and their dog, and their cow, and the donkey, back to a safe place as the storm clouds started to roll in. But isn't it a puzzle, though, the way he sucks his thumb when he's thinking about something? You'd almost think there is magic to it, said the people. Yes, you almost would. And there is Finn, sucking his thumb where the hook went in, and thinking about a problem that he needed to help solve. And that's the end of this story about Finn McCool and the great fish. Our next book is Max and the Tagalong Moon. Max is a little boy who loves his grandpa very much. One night, as Max was leaving grandpa's house, he reached up to give grandpa a big hug goodbye. In the sky behind grandpa appeared a fine big moon. Look, grandpa, the moon. That old moon will always shine for you, on and on. Grandpa and Max gazed quietly at the big moon together as it embraced them in soft yellow light. Max smiled at the moon and then at grandpa and then climbed into the car. Bye-bye, Grandpa. Bye-bye, Moon. But as the car pulled away, Max kept his eyes on Grandpa until he disappeared from sight. And then all he saw was the moon. Max kept his eyes on that moon, waiting for it to disappear too. The long ride home was swervy-curvy, this way and that, all the way. And the moon seemed to tag along. There's a picture of the moon, big and bright in the sky, even though Max's family was traveling away from Grandpa's house. Max giggled as he watched the bright, beautiful orb flicker through the passing trees, trailing behind the car as it traveled home, this way and that, playing peekaboo. Up a hill, down a hill, the moon was ever there. Over a bridge, around a curve, and the moon just bounced along. Around a tree, past a field of sleeping cows, the moon stayed quietly with Max. Through a small town with roundabout streets, Max gazed as the moon kept up. At the mouth of a tunnel and out the other end, Max smiled when he saw the moon there, waiting. Dark clouds tumbled across the night sky. the stars and nightingales all faded away. Max searched the darkness and wondered, "Where is that moon?" Grandpa said it would always shine for me. Finally home, Max took one last look up at the empty night sky. "Well, I guess that old moon couldn't shine for me all the way home." Upstairs in bed, the room was dark. Max felt alone. He missed his grandpa. He missed that tag-along moon. Then slowly, very slowly, Max's bedroom began to fill with a soft yellow glow. The clouds faded away, and the moon peeked through. Max gazed up at that magic ball of light and thought about what Grandpa had said. "That old moon will always shine for me." On and on. Max knew then that whenever he saw the moon, he would think of his grandpa, on and on. And then he slept soundly, with that big old moon shining softly in through his window. Our next book is Ladybug Girl's Day Out with Grandpa. Now, the Ladybug Girl was a little girl named Lulu who liked to call herself Ladybug Girl. She wears a red leotard with a red tutu and red wings with black dots on them and a headband with little red feelers and red boots with black dots. But her real name is Lulu. "I can't wait to see dinosaurs, birds, elephants, emeralds, bears, lions, planets, and whales," Lulu tells her grandpa. "Oh," she adds, "and stingrays, too." Grandpa is taking her to the Natural History Museum. "I want to learn everything about everything," Lulu says. "There is a lot to see here," Grandpa tells her. "We won't be able to learn about everything in one day." "I can do it," Lulu insists. "I'm a ladybug girl." Inside the museum, there is a mighty mama dinosaur protecting her baby. It makes Lulu's wings flutter with excitement. "What do you want to see next?" Grandpa asks Lulu. "More dinosaurs," she declares. But as they walk to the elevators, Lulu calls, "Wait, Grandpa, look over here. Elephants! Let's learn about the elephants." Then something else catches her eye. "What is that, Grandpa?" Before he can tell her that it's a Cape buffalo, Lulu is already turning towards the bears. "Doesn't that look like my teddy bear Blueberry, Grandpa? Can we learn about bears now?" "We can, but hold on. We can't learn about dinosaurs and Cape buffaloes and bears at all at the same time." "Well, okay then, dinosaurs first," Lulu calls, dashing ahead. The line for the elevators is so long, so Grandpa and Lulu take the stairs. There are a lot of steps, but not too many for Ladybug Girl. When they get to the dinosaur wing, Lulu cannot believe how giant the Titanosaur is. It's so big that its head and neck poke into a whole nother room. Yikes, that's a scary-looking skeleton there. There are a lot of different kinds of dinosaurs, and their names are about as long as the entire alphabet. "This one is a Stegosaurus," Grandpa says. But just then, Lulu notices another dinosaur behind her. The Tyrannosaurus Rex looks like it is roaring, and Lulu roars right back. "Roar, roar, roar." Grandpa suggests that they move on to the mineral hall. Gemstones are much quieter. Lulu is dazzled by the sparkling minerals and crystals that line the walls. "I'll be a queen, Grandpa, and these are all my jewels. Oh, they're so beautiful. So many different colors arranged in the display board. Then Grandpa shows her something that just about fills the entire room. It's a meteorite, he says. It fell from outer space to Earth a long time ago. Outer space? Lulu realizes that there's even more to learn about than she had thought. And then she remembers, we still haven't seen the blue whale. Come on, Grandpa. The blue whale is huge. It floats high above the whole hall. Lulu feels like they are underwater. There it is, huge up there. She ice skates with a walrus and swims with a turtle. And then she sees a stingray. She's almost forgotten that she wanted to learn about stingrays. How is she going to learn everything in just one day? This is what my dog Bingo must feel like in the forest when he wants to smell everything at once, Lulu sighs. Lulubug, Grandpa says, Bingo the dog explores one thing at a time so that he can fully appreciate it. If you take your time and are still for one moment, you'll learn more. And there is one more place for us to visit, Grandpa adds. Lulu perks up. What is it? Grandpa leads her through the museum and to a special door. It opens to a room that takes Lulu's breath away. Butterflies of every color flutter around tropical flowers. The air is warm and smells like perfume. Lulu flits around trying to see a butterfly up close, but every time she runs near, they fly away. What a beautiful room with all the butterflies fluttering here and there, and the flowers. Grandpa calls over to see a chrysalis. It may not look like much, but there are big changes happening to the caterpillar inside. These chrysalises look like little fuzzy beans, and inside was the baby, a caterpillar turning into a butterfly when it comes out of the chrysalis. Really? Lulu asks, taking a closer look. Together they learn about how a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. It takes some time, her grandpa tells her, and it does not happen overnight. And then Lulu notices a big yellow butterfly. She slowly moves closer to it. She stays as still as a flower. Now Lulu can see the cool pattern and shimmery texture of its wings. And she can even see its tiny eyes and its antennae. She is amazed when it lifts off and comes to sit on her finger. Hello, butterfly, she whispers. I can fly too, because I am the ladybug girl. After they go to the gift shop, Lulu and Grandpa sit on the museum steps. That was really fun, ladybug girl says. Even though I didn't learn everything. Do you know everything now, Grandpa? She asks him. No, he laughs, not even close. You learn new things your entire life. And since we both have more to learn, we'll have to come back to this museum again. Yes, agreed Ladybug Girl. And then we can spend more time with the bears. And that's the end of that story. It was Saturday morning. Oh, sorry, this book is called Saturday is Swimming Day by Haiwan Yum. I almost forgot to tell you the title. It was Saturday. I told my mom that my stomach hurt. She took my temperature, said I didn't have a fever, so I could still go to my swim lesson. She rubbed my tummy and said it would probably feel better once I got there. But I didn't think so. Mom packed my strawberry bathing suit and my too small swim cap. When we got to the pool, Mom said, "This is Mary. She'll be teaching you, and I'll be waiting right outside when you're done. Now have fun." I changed ever so slowly. I even went to the bathroom 3 times. When Mary called everyone to the pool, I was the last one in line. The pool was loud, and the floor was slippery and cold. My head felt tight under my swim cap, and my stomach still hurt. When Mary whistled for the lesson to start, some kids jumped right in and made great big splashes. Mary said it was okay not to get in if my stomach hurt. I sat on the edge of the pool the whole time. After class was over, my stomach felt better. I took off my swim cap and showered so that my head would be wet like everyone else's and Mom would not know that I did not even get into the pool. The next Saturday, I had a very bad stomach ache. When Mary blew the whistle, I did not get in. I told her I had a stomach ache, and she said she would hold me so that I could practice ice cream scoops like the other kids. I guess ice cream scoops is a special way to learn to swim. Mary helped me into the pool. Then the water was very warm and made my stomach feel a little better. I did ice cream scoops and some kids. And then we crossed the whole pool. That night, when I took a bath, I practiced my kicks. There she is in the bathtub getting water all over the floor. The next Saturday, I didn't have a stomach ache. I packed my bathing suit and my new swim cap that was not too little for me. When we got to the pool, Mary blew the whistle, and I got into the water very carefully. Mary held my hands, and I showed her my kicks. She said they were very good. Then Mary said to put floats on our stomachs so that we could feel like starfish. She put her hands under me and helped me to lie back in the water. And suddenly, she wasn't holding me anymore, and I was floating all by myself. There she is, enjoying the swimming with all the other kids. And after the starfish, we did some kicking with friends to see who could make the biggest splashes. There they all are, holding on to the side of the pool. And all the kids are kicking together. She said, "I can do this all by myself. I even did 2 bobs. And next week, maybe, I'll do 10 bobs. And no stomach ache." And I think she started to like swimming, don't you? Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and vision impaired. So long, until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.